that get your attention?
Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is now 1:01 p.m. It is Monday, February 27, 2017. Before we begin, I want to thank Christy Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, and Kyle Schramm from the Juno LIO, who make sure we have sound and a transcript of our committee hearings. At this time, I also want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Always a good reminder for me, too. Present today, we have Representative Kopp, Representative Reinbold, Representative Christ Tompkins, my Vice Chair, Representative Fansler, and myself, Representative Klayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is the confirmation hearing for the Commission on Judicial Conduct. There's two people that have been nominated for this, and I would note that we have now been joined by Representative Eastman and Representative Ledoux. I believe both Ms. Banky and Ms. Jabe are online. Can you both hear us?
Yes, thank you.
Ms. Jabe, are you online?
I am, yes. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. And how about Ms. Banky? Are you online? No, she's not online. Okay. So right now we only have one of the appointees here to testify. So we're going to open the public hearing for invited testimony. And Ms. Jabe, if you could please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Janine Jabe. I am a resident of the small community of Hope, Alaska. I am a fourth-generation Alaskan with six children, making them fifth-generation Alaskan. That's my great-grandparents pioneered to Alaska in the early 1920s. I own two businesses in Alaska, Treeline Construction in Anchorage, which employs approximately 40 Alaskans annually, and Alaskan Byways, which is a small nightly cabin rental business in Hope, where I rent several historic homes and even a vintage Alaskan sleeper car that we bought from Nanana and are currently renovating. I've been married for 17 years, and my husband and I have been involved in foster care and foster adoption since our first year of marriage. I served as a public member on the board of Barbers and Hairdressers for the last 4 years, and on that board I've learned a great deal about the legislative process and have been actively involved in seeing two bills signed into law, and I'm currently working on a third bill, SB 4, which in part seeks to remove burdensome overregulation for the barbering and braiding industries, as well as increasing economic opportunity for licensees governed by the board. When I decided not to seek reappointment on the board of Barbers and Hairdressers, I was asked by boards and commissions to consider applying for the Commission on Judicial Conduct as a public member. I began doing a great deal of research on the commission and learned quite a bit about the legal process and the code of judicial conduct. I also reviewed some of the complaints that the commission has addressed for the last couple of years, and I decided that I would like to apply as a public member. I have no professional background in law, and I have limited experience in the courts, which include a contested adoption, which went to the state Supreme Court, and two small contractual issues with my construction company. That said, I do feel like my time in front of the judges was fair and balanced, and I believe strongly that I am an objective person who isn't afraid to make tough decisions, ask hard questions. I'm honored to be appointed by the governor for this position, and I do hope to be confirmed by the legislature, where I can apply my years and experience as a business owner and a wife and mother and a lifelong Alaskan. As with my time on the regulatory board, I have been serving with the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers. I do look forward to being an active part of the judicial branch of government, and I welcome any questions any of you might have.
Thank you very much. And so far it looks like Ms. Banky has not called in, so I'm going to close the invited public testimony at this time. Thank you very much for your testimony. And as has been the practice, I'm going to go around the committee and give everyone a chance to ask any questions they may have. I would note that we have been asking different nominees a number of hypothetical questions, and I just would note that we should exercise real caution in asking hypothetical questions, because it's really impossible for any hypothetical to represent the range of facts and issues that may come up in an actual complaint that may come before this commission or other different commissions that serve in state government. And so I would just urge us all to exercise caution on hypotheticals, because I think it could put a nominee in an uncomfortable position of expressing an opinion on something that they should really wait to do until they have all the facts that would come before them in their role in the committee. Representative Eastman, any questions for Ms. Jabe?
I'll pass.
Representative Kopp.
Mr. Bay, thank you very much for applying. I think I met you last year dealing with getting the public seat added to the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, and I appreciate your continued interest. My question is, how did you form your interest in justice matters, and what I see that the other three boards you're interested in are the Human Rights Commission, Police Standards Council, and Juvenile Justice Committee. This is judicial conduct. And but looking at your resume, it doesn't jump out why justice would be such an important thing to you. Can you just share the committee how you acquired this interest?
Sure. Thank you for the question. I believe justice is important to all Americans. That said, I had a keen interest simply because I have never been actively involved in the judicial branch of government before. I believe I have what it takes to make tough decisions and be fair and balanced in making decisions. But as a public member, I think that my perspective would be I would represent people who are going before a trial judge or before a judge of a civil case and would expect and hope that the judge is being held to the highest standards of law. The other three options on there that I indicated on my original application, you're right, I didn't actually notice the stream of similarities in there, but they do all have some elements of justice and judiciary. I suppose it's just the stage of life I'm more keenly interested in the judicial branch of government.
God, broke up there, but that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative, any follow-up? And just a clarification on that question, Mr. Bay, I had the impression from our meeting that you actually hadn't thought about being on the Judicial Conduct Commission. That was actually at the suggestion from the governor's boards and commission folks that you considered, and it hadn't been on your list till they suggested it, but maybe I misunderstood our conversation.
No, you are correct on that. When I told the boards and commissions I wasn't going to seek reappointment on boards and barbers and hairdressers, it was shortly after that Lindy Irwin's boards and commissions asked me to consider the Judicial Conduct Commission. I didn't know much about it, so that's when I began my investigation. And the initial application asks any other boards you might be interested in, and that was where those other three options came in.
Okay. Representative Christ-Tompkins, any questions for the applicant or nominee? Representative Fansler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first off, let me start off by saying thank you to Mr. Bay for meeting with my office beforehand in the Capitol here. I thought that was a good first step to meeting the people that go out there and volunteer all across our great state. So thank you for being willing to volunteer in your past public service. I guess I'll just elaborate one kind of question to follow up a little bit is, you know, what is your understanding of what the Commission on Judicial Conduct does and kind of its boundaries and kind of where you see that it fits into the whole big picture here for Alaska?
Sure, thank you. Yeah, it was great to meet you as well. I'm sorry to have interrupted your lunch like that. I believe that the Judicial Conduct Commission is actively involved in self-policing the judicial branch. That is, it's set up with three judges, three lawyers, and three public members who are all represent different facets within that decision-making, and that our job is to investigate allegations against a judge, not their decision, but any kind of impropriety that they have, be it on or off the bench. And that our decision, if it merits some sort of censure, is then to make a recommendation to the state Supreme Court for their determination.
Great. Thank you.
Any further follow-up?
I guess my only follow-up for the record would be to just have you affirm or confirm that you feel like you could be capable to do that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Ledoux, any questions for Ms. Jabe?
Not really, but Janine actually is a personal friend of mine, and I think she'd do a great job, and I don't know if I need to declare a conflict of interest based on friendship, but just in case I do, I'll declare it.
Well,
thank you for applying for this, Janine.
Oh, thank you very much, Representative Ledoux.
Representative Reinbold.
No, I'll just look forward to meeting you, and thank you for being willing to step up.
Okay. And I have no questions for Ms. Jabe. And Representative Eastman, did you want to ask questions now?
I actually just wanted to say thank you very much for making yourself available to my office as well. And I'm sure the chairman of the committee are very gratified that all my questions have already been answered. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I note that while we've been having conversations with Ms. Jabe, that Melanie Bonnke has joined us. Ms. Bonnke, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. I apologize for calling in late. I was having technical difficulties.
That's okay. We are all in this digital world. We are all familiar with that from time to time, interfering with schedules. I'm going to reopen the public hearing for invited testimony and give an opportunity for Melanie Bonnke to introduce herself and proceed with your testimony. If you could state your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you. I'm Melanie Bahnke, B-A-H-N-K-E. I'm a lifelong rural Alaskan. I'm originally from Savunga on St. Lawrence Island. And I'm the president and CEO of COERIC, which is a regional nonprofit tribal organization in the Bering Strait region of Alaska. I'm married to Kevin Bahnke, and together we have three children. And I also have a master's degree in rural development.
Thank you very much. Anything else in terms of your invited testimony?
Oh, I thought you just wanted me to tell you a little bit about myself.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. You don't need to say more. We may have some questions. Because the connection isn't perfect, I wanted to make sure that you were finished and I wasn't cutting you off. All right. So what I'm going to do is close the testimony for invited public or invited testimony, and I will then open up the floor for questions from the committee. Representative Eastman, questions from Ms. Bahnke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Bahnke, can you tell us a little bit about why, of all the various boards and commissions in the state, you chose to serve on this commission?
Sure. There's a couple of reasons why. First and foremost, we enjoyed having a really good judge here for years. The late Ben Esch was an excellent judge. And unfortunately, after his tenure, the next judge who served after him, there were several issues. And he ended up being sanctioned by the Supreme Court, and that really opened my eyes to the importance of the Commission on Judicial Conduct. And that first spurred my interest. But going backwards, my predecessor at COERIC served on the Alaska Rural Justice and Law Enforcement Commission. I'm also serving on the Governor's Tribal Advisory Council in the justice seat. Alaska Natives are overrepresented in the both the court and correctional system, and I figured I should do my part to lend my unique perspective and experience and take an active role in doing my part to contribute to the state and work towards solutions. And if it's through this council, then identifying, recognizing any misconduct at the judicial level and being part of bringing that forward and exposing that and recommending actions by the Supreme Court.
Thank you. And would you have any reticence to recommending removal of a judge for serious misconduct?
I would take a look at all of the circumstances and facts in a case. It's a nine-member commission. I just had my first face-to-face meeting on Friday and learned a lot, but we deliberate, and I think the recommendations would be commensurate with the offenses committed. And no, I wouldn't have any hesitancy if the actions committed by a judicial officer warranted that.
Well, thank you very much for your interest in this position.
Representative Cobb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Bahnke, thank you so much for applying. I appreciate your diverse background in tribal justice issues, and also that you have an educational degree, and that you are very active in justice matters currently. So I have no questions, but thank you for seeking this position.
Representative Christon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I wanted to note, similar to Representative Ledoux, that I have the fortune of knowing someone informally both of the conferees, I guess is probably the word, and have a lot of respect for both of them and a lot of gratitude for both of them, and I have no questions.
Representative Fansler.
Yeah, maybe once again, just want to say thank you to Ms. Banky for stepping up and volunteering here. I think that's great. I will pose the same question I posed, I think, to Ms. Jabe. Just want to hear from you, Ms. Banky, what your exact thought process is on what does the Judicial Conduct Commission do. You kind of spoke on that a little bit in your opening remarks, and what role you feel that you would play on there, and go from there. Thank you.
Sure. Actually, the first meeting that I participated in, we were actually determining whether or not to recommend disability retirement for a judge. So actually taking a look at physical or mental disability and making recommendations to the Supreme Court is one of the things that this commission does, outside of just exploring whether or not misconduct has taken place, whether it's improper courtroom behavior, improper or illegal influence, or impropriety off the bench. We do not address whether or not there were legal errors committed by a judge. That's up to the appellate courts. So we're taking a look at whether or not a judge has improper behavior, committed anything illegal, and then impropriety on or off the bench. And then the other thing that we're looking at is their pay affidavits. The judges must swear that when they sign their pay affidavits that they haven't fallen behind on their cases. So if there's a pattern of that, then we recommend certain sanctions. That's my understanding.
Follow on?
Okay, thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
No questions.
And Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Chair Klayman. Basically, I just wanted to ask you just a couple questions. One of them is a comment. There has been interest in changing the makeup of the Judicial Council, because right now it's three attorneys and three non-attorneys, and then, of course, there's the tie-breaking.
Representative, we're actually on the Judicial Conduct Commission, not the Judicial Council.
Okay.
So she's not applying for the Judicial Council. This is the Judicial Conduct Commission, which has three judges, three lawyers, and three public members.
All right. Okay. Well, with that, I'm going to change my question just a tiny bit. Thank you for the clarification there. My staff did not put this in my package today, so I'm not just a little bit caught off guard here. But let me ask you a question. Do you feel I'm going to echo David Eastman's comment, because I thought it was an outstanding comment. As a member, what do you feel would warrant the removal of a judge?
Well, like I said, there are nine of us that would be determining this together. I've only actually participated in one full meeting, but I would look at, you know, severe illegal behavior, corruption, those types of things, collusion. One of the things that I asked at our last meeting, our very first meeting on Friday, was how have we handled issues like this in the past? Because I believe that one thing that we need to be careful of is setting precedents. We need to look at situations that are similar and treat them similarly, and not let our emotions rule the final decision.
Okay, so I was reading in Article 4, Section 8 of the Constitution. You guys are actually Section 10 on the Commission on Judicial Conduct, and so it definitely does talk about disqualifications as well for judges. But just just want to make sure you read the Constitution well and definitely follow us. And I would also ask that if you wouldn't mind keeping us in the loop, if there's any really big issues, sometimes we are not kept in the loop for judicial counsel or even the Commission on Judicial Conduct. And I would just ask that you please keep the legislative branch and House representatives in particular speaking for us apprised of any key issues that may be of concern. So with that, thank you for the willingness to serve.
I'd be happy to do that. I would assume that most of our communications will go through the executive director to the legislature, but I'll also make myself available. And I don't blame you for being confused between the Judicial Council and this commission. They're similarly named.
Thank you very much. I don't have any questions, and now I just open the floor up for, or actually I'll go around again in terms of any comments as to both applicants, and we'll go the reverse order this time. Representative Reinbold, any further comments as to either Ms. Jabe or Ms. Banky?
Pass.
Representative Ledoux? Representative Fancy?
Just thank you for your public service.
Representative Price-Tompkins? Representative Cobb? Representative Eastman? All right, and I would just thank both of you for your willingness to serve. I will note that I was certainly came to know Ms. Jabe through her work with the Barbers and Hairdressers Board, and one of the things that really impressed me about her was that she gets fully engaged in what she does. She doesn't do anything halfway, and mm-hmm. and that's always a reassuring part for somebody that's volunteering on commissions like this. And so, and I get the sense from Ms. Banky that she has the same kind of attitude and approach, so I'm pleased to hear from both of you. And seeing no other comments, Representative Fansler.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Judiciary Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Melanie Banky and Janine Jabe to the Commission on Judicial Conduct. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individuals during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you very much. And either after we adjourn or it may sort of circulate while we're proceeding on. Actually, we're going to take a short recess because the folks from the Department of Labor are not yet here for the next bill. So we're going to take a short at ease. And during the at ease, if you could sign the report. On record, our final order of business today is House Bill 69, Repeal Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, sponsored by the House Rules Committee by the request of the governor. This is the first hearing on the bill in the Judiciary Committee. The sponsor has made changes to House Bill 69 and has proposed a committee substitute. Here to present the bill is Commissioner of Labor Heidi Dreiges, and with her to explain the changes in the CS is Debbie Banaszak, Legislative Liaison to the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Would you please come forward to the table, identify yourself for the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Heidi Dreiges. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. HB 69 will repeal the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission and return the appeals process from the Workers' Compensation Board to the courts. The commission was created to streamline the appeals process from the Workers' Comp Board and provide expertise in handling workers' comp cases. Since its creation in 2005, however, 50% of the Commission's decisions have been reversed by the Alaska Supreme Court. This high reversal rate underscores the fact that the Commission is ineffective. And the Commission is essentially an appellate court, just like the Superior Court, and almost every appellate court in the country is composed of a panel of lawyers. Yet the Commission's lay commissioners have no legal training and contribute very little in the way of legal analysis to the issues being decided by the Commission. It falls to the Commission's chair alone to resolve the legal issues with minimal input from the lay commissioners. Further, the chair also writes the Commission's decisions. Therefore, the Commission's decisions are really the work of one person and not the work of a panel with legal expertise in workers' compensation, a further departure from the original intent of the legislation. By eliminating the commission, the department anticipates a cost savings of over $220,000 for the remainder of FY18 due to the transition provisions in the legislation, and over $440,000 in subsequent years. The impact on the public will be minimal. By repealing the commission, the appeals process will revert back to the Superior Court, which was the process in place from statehood until 2005. The court system would see an increase of approximately 20 to 30 cases, give or take a few, per year. This volume can be absorbed by the court system. Here to take the committee through the bill analysis is Debbie Banaszak, who's a legislative liaison for our department. Marie Marks, who's the division director of workers' compensation, is also here and is available for questions if any of the members have any.
Hello, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Debbie Banaszak, and I am the legislative liaison for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. So I'm going to walk through the changes from version A to version O. And just for clarifying purposes, the word board is referring to the Workers' Compensation Board, and the word commission refers to the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission. This bill would repeal the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission. So the summary of changes between HB 69 version A and the proposed CS for HB 69 version O. Basically, on page 1, line 5, it inserts two inadvertently omitted court rule references, appellate procedure rules 602C and H, into the bill title. Basically, they were there, they weren't there, and now they are. Page 3, lines 4 through 9, it simplified the paragraph structure and the wording of the language, clarifying when a board order becomes effective and is final. Page 3, lines 10 through 19, it clarified the wording of when a board order might be stayed. Continuing through that section, page 3, line 20, it removes the first sentence from section C. The sentence is unnecessary because it restates a provision already found in the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act. Page 3, lines 28 through page 4, line 6, it amends AS 2330-155F directly instead of repealing subsection F and creating a new subsection R, which is the way version A was written. So basically, they're just amending F, and we're not going to have R anymore. Page 4, lines 14 through 23, this was section 8 in the original bill, and it was completely deleted out in the CS. In version A, section 8 addressed direct court rule amendments relating to cost bonds, and the court system suggested that it would be more efficient and more consistent to instead address these through indirect court amendments in new section 10. Because section 8 of the original bill was deleted in the CS, the section numbers from that point on are renumbered. For example, the previous section 9 is now section 8. Page 4, line 12, it removes, again removes that 2330-155F from the list of statutes being repealed because it's no longer being repealed. There's going to be changes made to F, and that was what we had discussed earlier. Page 4, line 15 through line 30, it simplifies the description of how the court rules are amended and adds a description about how appellate procedure rules, those 602 C and H, are amended. The indirect court rule amendments in the original bill were too wordy and potentially confusing, and the court system suggested it be rewritten. And finally, on page 4, line 31 through page 5, line 17, it just simplifies the paragraph structure and the wording of the applicability language.
Any questions at this point for either for Ms. Dragas or I should say Commissioner Dragas or for Ms. Banaszak? I don't see any questions. There is a proposed committee substitute for House Bill 69 before us. Can I have a motion to adopt the CS as our working document, Representative Hanslow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the House Judiciary Committee adopt the committee substitute to House Bill 69, version 30-GH17730 as our working document.
Mr. Chairman. Question? Or?
It's been adopted, right, Mr. Chairman?
Well, we're actually doing that right now.
Okay.
Is there any objection to adopting the committee substitute? Hearing and seeing no objections, then the committee adopts the committee substitute for House Bill 8. At this point, unless there, we'll hold off discussions because I'm going to open up for public testimony and hear from folks. I will now open public testimony for House Bill 8.
Mr. Chairman?
Am I misspeaking?
Chairman, I do have a question for them.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Dragas is...
Just a second. Representative Christ Tompkins reminded me it's not House Bill 8, it's House Bill 69.
Get the right number there.
Go ahead. Sorry about that.
I think we got it right on the committee substitute, I hope.
Yeah, everything's right except when I start talking.
Okay. The evidence given for the inefficiencies of the Appeal Commission, is there any countervailing view, or is there any pushback on that, or is that generally well accepted? Your statements about 50% Supreme Court reversal, long wait times, and otherwise not realizing its potential that the legislature had hoped for in 2005.
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, I guess the only evidence is that we haven't. No one has come to the department with opposition, whether insurers, employers, or plaintiffs' counsel. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, sort of says that there is evidence. I think we have a chart. I don't know if the members have it, and if they don't, we're happy to hand it out, that the previous chair put together that sort of summarizes the caseload for the Workers' Comp Appeals Commission since its inception in 2005. And it can be a little bit confusing as far as the 50% reversal rate. Basically what that is of the cases that the Alaska Supreme Court has decided on the merits, roughly 50% of them, I think it's like 49% or 51%, have been overturned. So there have been dismissals for various reasons not relating to the merits of the decision, and I hope I'm not misstating that. There are two folks in the audience that can also speak to this bill, Marie Marks, who's a director of the Division of Workers' Compensation, and also Nancy Mead, who's the general counsel of the court system as well. But I guess that's the best I can say is, like, we haven't heard anything about it, and I think that's, in my opinion, that's a recognition that it's just not working the way that folks had hoped. It's not resulting in more efficient hearings. It's not resulting in this expertise that we thought we would see. The commissioners have to have, I believe, 3 years of experience on the Workers' Compensation Board, and that was how we came, or I shouldn't say we, actually, it was the legislature, how they came up with the expertise to put on the commission, and that never realized itself in actuality.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, not for Commissioner Dragas, it would be for the courts. Thank you, Chairman.
And Nancy Mead is here. She's on the list for public testimony. I expect we'll hear from her, so I won't call her up now because she'll be here. Representative Eastman. Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious. It seemed like there was a short list of invited testimony. Have we invited the chairman of the commission to testify and give their perspective on this change?
They are not on the list at this point.
Is there an opportunity, perhaps, we might extend that invitation?
We can certainly look into having him or her testify. We're not going to move this bill today, so there would certainly be an opportunity to get them at the next hearing.
Sure. I have some questions.
Go ahead.
Through the chair, Madam Commissioner, what can you tell us about just the general makeup of this commission? What are the length of the terms, and are the positions filled or are they vacant? Can you just kind of give us a broad brush?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I'm going to call up my lifeline, Marie Marks, who knows a little bit more about it. She can tell you the terms. To my knowledge, there are no vacancies right now. We do have a new chair of the commission who was appointed several months ago. Can you come up?
If you could let us know your name and your affiliation.
Sure. For the record, my name is Marie Marks. I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation. Correct. We did have a vacancy when the past commission chair, Andy Hemingway, retired, and we had filled that with Commissioner Dee Ford. So she is the current chair of the commission. What that means is the chair is the one responsible for, is the full-time staff member, division workers' compensation staff member that is an attorney member. They are the attorney member. And they are the one that rules on evidence. They are the one that draft the decisions and so forth. And so that would be Dee Ford. In addition to that, we have two labor representatives who are lay members of the community and two industry representatives that are members of the community. A board panel consists of three members, chair and one from labor and one from industry. So we have a pool of five within which to draw from, but the chair will always sit. So it's really two for labor and two for industry. And those seats are not vacant. They are filled. And those terms are, and I would defer to the appeals commissioner chair. I don't think she's on the phone here right now. But I think that the terms are... It's correct, yeah. It's 5 years, yeah. Representative, our chair, Clayman, the term is 5 years.
And follow up. Through the chair. And what's the appointment mechanism? How are those individuals chosen for appointment?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, it's like any other boards and commission seat that... the boards and commissions, I shouldn't speak for them, but what I believe happens is that they solicit for applications to fill different seats. Often those are the departments are active in that process, and then boards and commissions gets a list of applicants to the governor, and then the governor appoints the position.
Follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
Through the chair. And maybe I'm wrong here, but it seems to me that there's something of a disparity between the argument being made for why the members of the commission are not experienced enough to be making the decisions, and yet the governor certainly has the ability, a governor, certainly this governor at this time, to select individuals with the right credentials to be able to make good decisions. Is there a reason why that hasn't happened?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I wouldn't say that the individuals aren't qualified. They're certainly qualified. Certainly under the statute, they're qualified. The difficulty is that they are lay commissioners, and our workers' comp board is made up of individuals from the community. Some have legal expertise, some do not. The difficulty is that they are deciding matters of law. When the Workers' Comp Board decides issues of fact, when it gets appealed to the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, the Workers' Comp Appeals Commission is looking at matters of law, and that's difficult for a layperson to do. It's no disrespect to lay commissioners at all. And in practice, and I've talked with the past two chairs, when I first came in, the chair had... mentioned that to me. He was actually on his way out retiring, and he was very honest about his thoughts on how the commission was working. And he basically told me that he's a lone commission because he writes all the decisions, and I'm sure that they got reviewed and things like that, but when you're not an attorney, you're loath to make changes to a decision, I believe. So I think that's part of the problem. It's not that they're not qualified. It's that this is a legal opinion that's being written. And there just has not been input from the lay commissioners. You have to qualify to be a commissioner on the board with workers' comp board experience, and they do have that. But it turns out there's a different kind of experience that's necessary at the appellate level.
Thank you.
And just for my own clarity, are any of the positions on the current commission paid, or is it all volunteer?
Mr. Chair, there are two positions that are paid. The chair is a full-time position, and the chair is an attorney, and there's a full-time administrative staff. So there are only two individuals that are full-time. That's the only employees of the commission.
Okay. I don't see any other Representative Price Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Dragas, Ms. Marks. I was wondering if you could speak to the extent that this legislation, HB 69, relates to the Omnibus Workers' Comp Reform Bill, if any relationship exists at all.
Through the Chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, I think if it doesn't really relate. If it relates at all, it's the department's serious effort at making efficiencies wherever possible, looking for ways where we can do things better with less money. And when I first came in as commissioner, the House Finance Co-Chair tasked us with the responsibility of going through our statutes to determine basically what were things that the legislature has, I hate to use this term, but saddled you with that you don't think are working or no longer necessary that could save money. And so it was through that process we went through and said, well, this is something that's, you know, about 10 years ago that really hasn't been working. So that's really how it was identified.
Thank you. Just a quick comment, and thank you for that context. And I wanted to renote the uncanny similarity to your comments there to my colleague to my left and his remarks on a piece of legislation that we heard this morning on the House floor that came out of this committee.
All right. Any other questions for the two folks right now? I don't see any. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and open up public testimony for House Bill 69. I know one person that's already been asked about that they'd like to hear from is Nancy Mead, the general counsel of the court system, and she's actually on the list to testify for public testimony. So I would actually ask Ms. Mead if you could come forward and present your testimony, and I imagine there are clearly some questions coming.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Nancy Mead, general counsel to the Alaska court system. I don't really have any prepared testimony to give on this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions. It does have an impact on the court system. Obviously, I guess I just wanted to say that this was a bill sponsored by the executive branch, and last year when it came forward, I was surprised by it, but worked then with the Department of Labor and its representatives to ensure that if this were to be the policy adopted by the legislature, we could, in fact, implement it and implement it as smoothly as possible. They've been very receptive to our comments. But I think I wanted to put out there that this isn't something that we're also promoting, but we are, pleased to follow whatever policy that the legislature might put into statute. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about how it would impact us or anything else.
And just before we take I would assume that part of the reality is that where the Department of Labor is saving money by not having appeals commission and giving the cases to the court system, the court to some extent is picking up the cost of hearing those cases.
To the chair, that's correct. We submitted a fiscal note with a zero fiscal impact because we do try to be careful in our fiscal notes to only put fiscal impact when we actually will be hiring somebody or expending actual funds on supplies, for example. This will result in more work for the courts, but not the type of work that I could monetize into a position that would be required to implement this. But the judges will have certainly more work to do, as will our staff, as a result of this bill.
And I know Representative Kopp had a question, so I'll let him have the first opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was the line of my question was with the load transfer to the court. We certainly had a very good presentation from courts earlier, and we know that General Counsel Mead, judges are salaried, right? Doesn't matter how many hours they work.
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, that's correct.
Okay. So how many cases a year does the court anticipate picking up with this workload transferred to the court? And I would also ask, what is the average workload per case? How does that work out in reality?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, the average of cases that have been appealed over the past 10 years was about 33 cases. So the Superior Court would anticipate having about 33 additional administrative appeals. I would note that there is, as Representative Christ-Tompkins noted, other workers' comp bills going through this body at the time. With any changes in the underlying law, that may lead to additional appeals. So 33 has been the average. Of course, who knows what happens when the underlying laws that the board is applying change, and maybe more things are less established and more things may be appealed. But in any case, we've been operating under the assumption that there'd be about 33 additional cases. These cases are different from many of the other cases that the Superior Court handles, and they are considered by the judges to be more challenging and more time-consuming than many other types of cases. They don't have the priority or time pressure issues that a child in need of aid case does, or that a criminal case does, for that matter. But the administrative appeals are more the kind that are very brief, intensive, and that are done, as you may have been implying, often by judges on the Saturday, because they're longer cases to sit and think about and resolve. And so they are challenging for our judges, but again, you know, the judges have to do whatever comes before them, and we'll be able to do it. They did it previously, and I believe that the underlying reason for creating the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission is that the Superior Court judges took a long time with these cases. They are not their higher priority in terms of a child case or a criminal case or something. And there were some inconsistent decisions among Superior Court judges, and then there would only be consistency if something was appealed to the Supreme Court, because the Superior Court judges also don't have particular expertise in workers' comp cases, and this is a unique and somewhat arcane area of law with medical records and things like that. And even though the board's factual findings are established, the court does need to determine whether there's substantial evidence for those, which does require quite a review of the record. So with that said, they're challenging cases, but that's my description of how the courts would be handling it.
Follow-up, Representative Kopp?
No follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ledoux.
So I was just trying to figure out, right now, they go to the board, and then if you don't like the decision at the board, you go to the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission as opposed to the Superior Court.
Through the chair, that's correct.
And if you don't like the decision of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, you go straight to the Supreme Court?
And through the chair, that's correct as well. So this bill would substitute for the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission the Superior Court, so that a case could go from the board for the factual findings to the Superior Court for review and then to the Supreme Court for ultimate final review.
And my understanding is correct that quite a few of the decisions from the Appeals Commission have gotten reversed at the Supreme Court?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, as the Department of Labor Commissioner testified, the reversal rate is about 50%, and I have no reason to doubt that. We don't keep stats exactly on the reversal rate for certain types of decisions, but that's my understanding from their data.
So it's also possible, I guess, that there'd be less likelihood, I would think, of an appeal from the Superior Court, because at least those folks would probably have it legally correct, than from the Appeals Commission, which might cut down some of the work for the Supreme Court, I was thinking.
And through the chair, Representative Ledoux, interestingly, the number of cases that got appealed to the Supreme Court before 2005 from the Superior Court and the number subsequent to 2005 from the Commission was almost unchanged. And so, and indeed, before 2005, there was quite a reversal rate as well. Again, I haven't been able to find data, but these are difficult cases, and they have a lot of facts, and what's more, a lot of the injured workers are self-represented, and sometimes have difficulty creating the arguments and presenting things in the most effective manner for the court.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, can you speak to any of the reasons that the commission was created to begin with, or the board, and what the court's opinions might have been that involved that?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, as I alluded to, in 2005, there was some dissatisfaction with the way the courts were handling workers' comp appeals, and there was a reversal rate to an extent that bothered some people. And again, I don't have the data on that, but my review of the records from back when, there was the position that certain Superior Court judges decided cases in an inconsistent manner, and so a injured worker in Fairbanks would have one opinion and in Juneau another, and that can happen with Superior Court opinions, and precedent is not really established until the Alaska Supreme Court weighs in, and the a sector of the population wanted there to be experts deciding these cases. That is, those with familiarity with workers' compensation, and many of our judges don't have that expertise, but, you know, did their best, certainly. And there was a view that it was taking a long time, so the cases were decided in a year or 18 months, and that was dissatisfying to some people. And as a result, the Appeals Commission, as Commissioner Dragas stated, was intended to address those problems. It was hoped that they would be faster, that they would have consistency, and that more people with better expertise in this area would be deciding the cases.
Follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Through the chair, I understand from the Chief Justice and others in the courts that the court system has been doing its best to hold down costs and taking voluntary cuts and cutting down hours and such. Can you speak to any impact this change might have on the impacts of morale or things like that? Do you think there will be a noticeable change to morale to have the courts, you know, doing their best to cut down on things than to have an increase of this type?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I really do appreciate the question, and the fact is that our judges and courts accept everything that's brought to them legitimately. If it's the legislature's policy decision that the court handle these, we will handle these. Our judges, in general, though this is a difficult question to answer, have a very good morale. And so I wouldn't anticipate you know, people entering a phase of depression or anything, but it will be additional work, and we would hope that some bills that you pass might result in less work, and it ultimately, again, unless it's actually we have to hire a judge to handle these, the fiscal impact itself wouldn't be there, and so I don't know if I answered your question appropriately, but that's about all I can say.
I appreciate the answer. Thank you very much.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nancy, has the court looked at, just like we have therapeutic courts or we have some specialty judiciary training in certain areas of the law, if we had enough cases, do you think it would justify a couple judges specializing in this area of law, because as you mentioned, it is complex, it's very labor intensive, and certainly familiarity with the law, almost like an administrative law judge type of approach that deals very specifically with can you comment on that? Has the courts talked about this?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, occasionally it is suggested to the courts that there be a specialty judge for certain types of cases, and that's something we might consider. It's not a closed door. However, if you think about how we would staff that, you'd take a judge and have them do all of these. That means that judge would not be doing the child in need of aid cases or criminal cases or the divorce cases or the more routine cases, and somebody else would be taking up that work. And we might consider in certain areas doing that. In the past, we've had a reluctance on the part of judges to volunteer to take cases like this, and instead it has been expedient and efficient to spread them around, and whether that's always going to be the case, I don't know, but the Supreme Court would consider it if it becomes, you know, if the issue comes to the fore or judges suggest it, but I appreciate the suggestion.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. This seems like this is an intractable problem, kind of like a tar baby that nobody wants, and trying to figure out where it's best housed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I will just make this is probably more an observation. Actually, I'll make an observation and see what your thought is. I think one of the challenges to assigning a specific, say, we're going to say one judge will hear these appeals, then when you have the right to peremptory challenge any judge, you essentially have a judge that's assigned, and if they could be routinely challenged, then you're back where we are today, which is that they're sort of distributed to whoever. And I recognize some of these things are easier in the third judicial district when there's more, where there are more people and more judges, but maybe one solution is to not have specialized, but at least in the third judicial district have three judges that are that these get assigned to rather than the whole group. And that would mean that if somebody exercises a peremptory challenge, you're still getting one of the three judges that hears more of them, and that would probably increase the odds of consistency. Probably doesn't do much in the first district or the second district or the third district, just because you have so few judges to spread it around, but it may be that most of the cases would show up in the third district anyway. But that's just a potential way to kind of do a hybrid solution to some degree of specialization, but not over-specialized. But at least, I don't know whether that would work within the court system's framework or not, but it's an idea. I guess that's the question. Is that a possible option?
And to the chair, all options are possible. I think that should this bill become law, we would anticipate handling these appeals like other agency appeals and spread them around. Yes, most happen in the third judicial district. That's where most of the decisions come out of, and that's where most of the injured workers and employers are, just because that's the population center. And we would begin handling these just like other agency appeals. And if there were issues that arose, either timeliness or something else, the court would be open to considering the most efficient way to handle these. But you're correct that the peremptory challenge is a challenge, or could be.
Right. So you got a question from Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, and inspired by your comments, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kopp's comments about this as a tar baby, I was interested in not that that's a legal term of art or anything, but I was interested in terms of comparative policy, actually, and given the high rate of reversal in both of the sort of judicial regimes we've taken to address workers' compensation appeals, whether there are systems, hybridized or otherwise, in other states that seem to be successful and seem to contain and keep down rates of reversal and otherwise be judicially and administratively efficient.
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, actually, I'm not familiar with how workers' comp cases are handled in other states. I am aware that many other states have an appeals commission within their executive branch. Nonetheless, I'm probably not qualified to answer how well those work or whether they've been changed or gone back and forth. So perhaps somebody else can address that, and I'm sorry.
Representative Christ Tompkins, I see Representative that prompted a comment for suggestion from Representative Ledoux.
Do you have any idea whether the Compensation Commission was more or less generous to workers than the Superior Court?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't know, but I think I best not speculate. I know I've heard others testify along those lines before, so maybe somebody else can answer that question as well, but it's not within my area of expertise.
I'm wondering whether Ms. Dragas or Ms. Marks knows whether.
They're both shaking their head at the ears. All right. Well, before we get to them, is any other questions for Ms. Mead? Hearing seeing none, I think you're. Thank
May
you.
I just add one comment?
Sure.
I want to say again, even though I did say that the court's willing to take whatever the legislature gives them to resolve, and though they are difficult cases, our judges are, you know, ready to take it without fiscal impact and hopefully without any impact on their morale, if that's what your decision is.
Thank you very much. We also have, now, there was a question, and I'm not sure, I saw Ms. Dragas, or Commissioner Dragas shaking her head and others shaking their head about information on what the awards were like. Any testimony that? Shaking their head that they didn't have information. But Commissioner Dragas is going to come clarify what she meant by what I meant by her shaking her head.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't have any information about that. I've heard things anecdotally both ways, so I don't. You'd have to survey the cases from statehood in 2005 to know. And I don't know.
The reason that I asked the question is I was actually here in 2005, and it was part of this change that was made previously from the Superior Court was an attempt by Governor Murkowski to get down the workers' comp rates. And there was a feeling, I guess, amongst some in the business community that this would help. And the unions fought it tooth and nail. And, I mean, there was basically a big blow-up in the building. It was the oil taxes of 2005. And so it was created kind of with a bang, and it's kind of interesting that it looks like it's probably going to end kind of with a whimper.
Thank you very much. I see we have online, or actually, she's in Anchorage. Oh, wait just a minute. Hold on. Come back. Wait. I see Representative Bryce Tompkins has a question.
Sorry to be
I was not paying attention.
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just Jonathan come lately here. And I wanted to ask or re-ask, rather, the question I directed to Ms. Mead on comparative policy to see if you or the department have any perspective on models that work in other states perhaps more efficiently than Alaska and to what extent that informed this legislation.
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, I actually leaned in to ask Ms. Marks if she knew of other states. We haven't done that survey of what other states have done. I can't presume to say what happened 12 years ago when they looked. I'm guessing they looked to see what other regimes there were, and this is what they came up with. For our purposes, we simply wanted to go back to the way it was without having a fiscal impact. And it's not to, and I say this, and I don't want to ever speak for the court system, but we don't take lightly that we're, you know, the bill would essentially burden the court system with an additional 20 to 30 cases a year. I mean, we've had upwards of 40 cases, I believe. I don't have my notes in front of me. When it first started, it's down, I think, 20 last year. So it varies, but it has been declining. And, you know, we don't take that lightly. But the system, you know, was functioning for many, many years, and the attempt to make it better did not make it better.
Representative Reinbold?
I have a question just a response to Representative Ledoux.
Is it a question for Commissioner Dragas or more just
a? It was just a comment she made a few moments ago.
Okay. Let's finish with Commissioner Dragas to see if anyone has more questions. I don't see any. I think you're off the hot seat. Representative Reinbold, I'll go ahead and hear your comment. We've got Constance Livesey on the online to provide public testimony. Actually, you can make your comment. Go ahead.
Well, it's just a question to Representative Ledoux. Why did the unions, why were they concerned about this commission?
Representative Reinbold, I'm not here to give public testimony.
Okay, so Representative Reinbold, we're going to go continue with public testimony. We can take this up during discussion after this. Ms. Is it Livesey or Livesey? Are you online?
I am, thank you. It's Livesey.
Livesey, okay. Go ahead and state your name, any affiliation you may have, and then you may proceed with your public testimony. We're trying to keep the testimony to 2 minutes, but I bet some members may have questions. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. My name is Constance Livesey. I am an attorney here in the state of Alaska practicing in Anchorage, and the overwhelming part of my practice is workers' compensation defense. So I speak with that perspective. My comments are my own, although certainly I have been contacted by a number of clients, both employers and insurers, who are concerned about this bill. I would like to speak in opposition to House Bill 69 and in favor of retaining the Workers' Comp Appeals Commission. I've practiced here for 32 years, admitted in 1984, so I have about 17 years of workers' comp experience in the Superior Court appeal scheme and the 11 years with the Appeals Commission in place. And from a practitioner's perspective, the Appeals Commission is absolutely a better mousetrap. It is more efficient, it is more consistent, and the quality of the decision-making is better. I would like to speak to the respective experience and expertise of practicing before the Superior Court in workers' comp appeals versus the Commission. The Commission chairs, I believe there have been four or five, Ms. Knudsen, Mr. Keyes, Mr. Hemingway, and Ms. Ford. With the exception of Mr. Hemingway, who is a very experienced administrative law judge, the others have all been very experienced workers' comp practitioners. So they are lawyers with a workers' comp background. The same is true of the lay commissioners. I can speak most directly to Mr. Hagedorn and Mr. Ulmer, who were lay members of the Workers' Comp Board for many, many years before they became commissioners. While two of the three commission panel members are not lawyers, it is nonetheless the case that on appeal, sometimes the question is whether the board's factual findings are supported by substantial evidence. So I, as a practitioner, do not discount the input and importance of the lay members. But, you know, without arguing their individual merit, the commission chair is an experienced workers' comp practitioner. This is an arcane, esoteric, bizarre area of law that you don't wake up one morning understanding. And the reality of our Superior Court bench is they are people who have criminal law and civil law backgrounds. There is no wealth or depth of expertise on the Superior Court bench in this area. They are complicated appeals, and I can tell you from experience, I would walk in to do an oral argument to a Superior Court judge who is a bright, talented, respected member of the bar, but they would have no idea what I was talking about. So the commission brings a level of expertise that you are not going to find elsewhere. I also want to stress the cost savings aspect, because any claim of cost savings through eliminating the commission is simply illusory. There will not be fewer appeals. They will simply be shifted to the Superior Court that is less familiar with this area of law, and then, in my experience, typically took longer to decide a case. So, you know, this is cost shifting. It is not cost saving, even though certainly the Appeals Commission line item may jump out in a budget. In my view, this attack, if you will, on the commission is a misguided attempt to go back to a system that, as Ms. Mead stated, was not working well in the eyes of practitioners. I think you will bring increased system costs if you go back to the Superior Court. I think you will get less consistent results because they have no precedential value, and I think you will lose a wealth of expertise that will be hard to replace and that you will not replace by taking matters back to the Superior Court. I'm probably close to using my time. I will happily answer any questions that anyone has, but I urge you to not pass this bill.
Thank you very much, Ms. Livesey. Are there any questions for Ms. Livesey? Representative Eastman.
Yes, thank you, and through the chair. Arcane and esoteric are words that, of course, are of great interest to lawmakers. Could you speak to whether the difficulties with the law are more deal to things that we as a state are responsible for, or and I'll show my naivete here, are these more federally driven complications that make it esoteric?
Oh, it's
does she get none of the above as an option?
I guess.
Ms. Livesey.
I apologize through the chair. Workers' comp is a creature of state law in every state, unless you are a federal employee. So our laws in Alaska are, I don't believe, any more complex and strange than anyone else's. It's just a body of statutory law with which the average lawyer that doesn't practice in this area is not familiar. I compare it to me walking in and trying to survive a bankruptcy law case. I would have no idea what I was talking about. And that's basically the world of workers' comp.
Representative Eastman, follow-up?
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Representative Ledoux.
So, Ms. Livesey, is there an association, a group of workers' comp lawyers here in Alaska?
There is a section of the Bar Association. We meet the first Friday of every month, so we meet this Friday, and it includes workers' comp practitioners that represent employees and employers, but there is no other association of workers' comp lawyers as such.
Just follow up?
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
Do you have any idea whether or not your opinions would be reflective of the opinions of the section of the workers' compensation bar that you just referred to?
You know, I think you would find a range of opinions. I think there has been concern. This subject has come up. The commission is perceived to be under fire, and there are some members around the table when we meet that are somewhat resigned to its disappearance. There are some practitioners who are not particularly fans, and there are others who are. I don't know that I would say that there is any split down employer-employee lines.
So, just follow up.
Yep.
So, do you have any feelings as to whether or not the Compensation Commission tends to lean or be more favorable to workers versus employees than the Superior Court? How has that turned out as far as your practice is concerned?
Through the chair, I believe the high degree of variability in Superior Court decisions makes that a difficult question to answer. As I believe Ms. Mead alluded, one of the realities of going before the Superior Court is each judge could decide a case as he or she saw fit. There wasn't a great deal of consistency in interpretation of the law. They really were all over the map, whereas the commission has developed a more consistent body of law, and its decisions do have precedential value over subsequent board cases. I don't think the commission is perceived by practitioners as being pro-employer or pro-employee.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Livesey? I don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Livesey. I note that one of the members actually has a follow-up question for Ms. Mead. Ms. Mead, if you could come back. We're so glad you haven't left yet. And I believe Representative Christ Tompkins has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess hearing this testimony, I'm curious, I guess consistent with a question, I can't remember if it was Representative Ledoux, Representative Kopp may have asked, pre-2005 or whenever this current approach to workers' comp appeals was instituted, when cases were going into the judiciary, if there was any system, formal or informal, in which among the judges they would sort of were within the system of the judiciary, there'd be any kind of self-delegation to allow certain judges to develop more familiarity and expertise with what sounds like a very esoteric and arcane realm of law in order to create the best possible adjudication process.
Thank you. For the record, this is Nancy Mead again, General Counsel for the Court System, and through the Chair, Representative Christ Tompkins. The answer to that is no. Our cases are randomly assigned to judges in a certain court, for example, in Anchorage. Whatever cases come in go to one of those judges based on a random computer. You know, it's the last digit of the case number or something. And thereafter, there is generally not trading. Judges are ethically and otherwise required to take cases assigned to them. That is not to mean that there can't be some shuffling or reassignment for efficiency or for other reasons, but it's not for a judge to say, I don't like these cases, or I'd prefer Judge X take these instead because they're time-consuming for me. That doesn't happen. So at the time, they were handled just like any other agency appeal, and they were randomly assigned and decided by to whomever they were assigned. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up, Representative Christ Tompkins.
That's very helpful. I wonder, would this be crossing any sort of bright lines within the court system if, say, this bill were to pass and we go back to or institute this new system and there were some kind of mechanism written into law, or forget written into law, but some kind of mechanism that sort of designated a certain number of judges to be their sort of receivers for these cases in a way that was as fair and equitable as possible, but in the interest or towards the end of trying to allow certain judges to develop the familiarity with this realm of law to perhaps create more consistency and efficiency with the process. Is an idea, anything along those lines, something that you could see as having potential or promise?
Through the Chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, I think as I mentioned before, that can happen, and it may be decided amongst the presiding judges or the Supreme Court that these particular cases should be assigned or decided in a different manner from other cases. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities. And as I mentioned, there hasn't in the past been a lot of interest in having specialty judges in certain areas. For one thing, I think it would be hard to get judges to volunteer to take these at the expense of their other cases, and the organization might be challenging. And again, I don't mean to say that it can't happen, but it hasn't happened in the past, and sometimes people propose certain judges, only a couple of judges should handle, you know, business torts or something like that, and so far that hasn't been adopted as the most efficient and effective way to handle our caseload.
Thank you.
Our Representative Reinbold has a follow-up question.
I do. So basically, do you believe that it would be, if this bill passes, to the best interest of the courts and those judges that will be handling this to get any type of training so that they are more aware of the innuendos of this type of case?
Through the Chair, Representative Reinbold, maybe. We do judicial training in a conference once a year now, and this could certainly be a topic on the agenda. in light of the court's entire caseload, this will be a small number of cases. So every year they decide what needs to be in judicial training, and they focus on things that will have the most impact to the most people. And if you consider that 33 new cases will come to the court, we have 42 superior court judges. So on average, it won't work out this way, but on average, less than one per year per judge. I don't know if that would be something that would be focused on at a judicial conference. And again, that's not to say that if a certain judge sitting or soon to be appointed decides that they love these cases, they couldn't be sent to specialized training or something like that. I'm just not sure how we'll be handling those.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions for you. Thank you very much, Ms. Mead.
Thank you.
Is there a question for Ms.
No,
Mead?
No, not a question.
Okay, that's just hold on. Is there anyone else, either online or in the room, that would like to testify as to this bill? I don't hear or see anyone, and no one is showing up on the computer, so I'm going to hold on. Representative Reinbold, question.
Yes.
About public testimony.
Yes, it is about public testimony.
Go ahead.
And so, therefore, what I was simply a little bit earlier, because I know public testimony is still open as we speak, I wasn't asking her to testify public testimony. I was asking for a historic perspective. Why there was pushback in the past, and I do know that there's union reps in the room, and I'm wondering if someone can tell me why there was pushback when this appeals court was
okay.
Commission was created in the first place.
I do see somebody raising his hand, so not on the list, but come forward, let us know who you are, who you're affiliated with, and if you can answer Representative Reinbold's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Don Etheridge. I'm the lobbyist for the AFL-CIO Alaska. And the main thing on that particular time was there was a massive change in workers' comp happening at that time. We were objective to this section of it because we were afraid it would get political with the changes in administration. We're looking at who's being appointed to that commission, and so that was one of our main concerns at that time, and so far it hasn't been that way, but we still don't think that it works right, because we were sold the goods that it was gonna be so much faster, better decisions, and we're not seeing it. We're not getting there. We're seeing that we have the same number of people going to Superior or to Supreme Court as there was before, and the decisions just aren't there for us. And don't believe it's worth the cost.
Representative Reinbold, follow-up.
Okay, I do appreciate that perspective. I'm glad that you had concerns for no reason and that it didn't get political on you, so it sounded like everything ended up working out. But what my question is to you, do you have any resolutions from your members that you support getting rid of this? Are you speaking on behalf of, like, the union reps or the union bosses, or do you think your members would want this commission? I want to know who this is impacting.
I'm speaking on behalf of the AFL-CIO, which is the umbrella of all the unions that are under the our umbrella there, and we have nobody that's came out and said that they don't support the bill. We've discussed it, and there has been absolutely zero discussion against the bill at all, and most of our people are just neutral on it because they don't have any concerns one way or the other. When you look at the overall package of how many of our members wind up going to the appeals, it's a very limited number. So, but we do support the department in the fact that we don't believe it works right.
Can I follow up?
Representative Reinbold, follow up.
Thank you. So there's been no vote amongst members, but you think most of them or all of them are aware of this bill, and you have had zero pushback. Is that correct?
Correct. We brought it up during the our legislative conference that we had here on the 15th and 16th, discussed it amongst leadership with 140 members present, and there has been zero pushback.
Thank And what, just to clarify, sure. Mr. Chairman, so that's leadership with 140 members, but I think you have 55,000 members. I mean, I'm kind of worried about the other ones. I just want to know if there's any resolution, any vote, or anything, any issues at all. Do you think that the Superior Court can handle this? I mean, without, you know, specializing in this type of process.
We did not bring it to a vote at all. Our we have no resolution in support of it. If we did do a resolution, it would have been the same 140 people voting on it. So we didn't believe that we needed to do a resolution. And the Superior Court is where we were before, and we had no problems going through the Superior Court. When we were sold the bill of goods on this, we were told it's going to be so much faster. We'll have claims in and out, and for some of the claims, it is. It is considerably faster. But for those that wind up going to the Supreme Court, it lengthens the case.
Follow up, Representative Ryan.
And I'm sorry, not to be redundant, but I wasn't at this meeting, and so I don't know who was there. Was this 140 members, were they all in leadership? So was this union, or was this just on the street type union members, the AFL-CIO? Because I really care about the members, if they're having a say so, or if they think this is working. I don't know. I've never been through this process before, but I think it's a very important policy call.
We had many members of the locals were also at this meeting too. It wasn't all just the union representatives. There was a lot of the membership, e-boards members. There was just Joe Blow member was at that meeting too. We had a wide variety. In fact, this was the biggest bunch of new faces I've ever seen at one of our conferences of younger union members that just showed up.
Further questions? I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much for volunteering to testify, even though you hadn't signed up. I don't see anyone else signed up for public testimony. I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony at this time. We're not going to be moving the bill, and so I will certainly be receptive to opening up public testimony in the future. I know that there had been a question from Representative Eastman about potentially seeing about whether the current appeals commission chair is available to testify. We will look into that. Representative Ledoux.
I'd like to see if there's somebody from the workers' comp plaintiffs bar who might want to testify.
Somebody that's typically representing the employee rather than the employer. We can see if somebody's available. And I would note, if Ms. Livesey, are you still on the line?
I am.
I would encourage you I know we won't be hearing this bill again this week. I would encourage you at the meeting of the workers' compensation. It's not the committee. But the section, that's right, the workers' comp section, I would encourage you to let folks know if they're interested in testifying to contact my office, because if we've got two or three that want to testify, I think the committee would actually like to hear from different people, and we can keep them advised of when we're going to be having the next hearing, and to the extent there's four or five that want to testify, we might even try to accommodate our schedule to their schedule to make it easier for them to testify.
Pass the word along. Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Mr. Chairman. I actually want to echo Representative Ledoux's comments, because I know we did hear from a member of the defense, as she said, and I would like to hear from the offense, if it can be described as such.
Representative Eastman, you can call it in this world the employer side and the employee side.
The workers, then.
Representative Ledoux is remembering her days as a plaintiff's lawyer, days I know well.
Is now a good time for just comments?
Sure, absolutely. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it seems to me that we do have what more than one person has described as an esoteric set of law, and that's been sort of bandied about from the courts, to the commission, perhaps now going back to the courts. But it would seem that if the law is esoteric, if it is arcane, that the courts aren't there to change the law and make it more understandable. That's our job. So I understand that there is some legislation dealing with workers' comp that's before the House currently. I don't have a position on that particular bill yet, but if there are any of us who are sitting on committees dealing with that bill, perhaps what we've heard today might be good to interject into that conversation, so that if that bill offers an opportunity to make the law less arcane and less esoteric, I think everyone would benefit from that. Thank you.
Representative Eastman, you will be pleased to know that the Workers' Compensation Reform Bill is, this is one of the committees of assignment, so you will have an opportunity to learn more.
And to make it less arcane.
And yet, I will note, as one who has done very, very little in my practice in the workers' compensation world, that some of the features about which it is arcane and complicated is a function of precedent over many years in not only this court but other courts, and that there's probably only so much that the legislature can do to make it less unique. And it's I mean, there's just a lot of complicated procedural and other rules that apply to workers' compensation that don't apply in other areas, so it becomes, it's kind of like somebody that does criminal appeals. They know a whole lot more about criminal appeals than somebody that does civil appeals. But I think there's a general interest always in trying to simplify things, but workers' comp is probably one that will change slowly, despite our best intentions. Any other comments? All right, as I noted before, we will hold House Bill 69 at this time for further review. We will adjourn for the day, and our next meeting will be Wednesday, March 1st. We are back to starting at 1 p.m., and we will stand adjourned today at 2:34 p.m.